Okay. Today's Haftorah, this week's Haftorah from Amos, Amos chapter 2 in Treasar, is really it is nothing like this Haftorah. It's so extraordinary because the first glance, it has really nothing whatsoever to do with our Haftorah, with our Parsha. We know the first Pasuk seems to connect, but even Rashi in his Perush to the Pasuk says that it's not the real meaning of the Pasuk. Let me explain quickly by reviewing what the Sefer is about up to now. Chapter 1 is about this map. You see this map here of Israel? Okay. Good.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, so there are 6 numbers surrounding the map. Okay. They don't circle Israel. They cross out Israel. It doesn't like start in one place and then surround Israel. It starts at the top, then goes to the bottom, then goes back to the top, and it goes back, and it makes like an X throughout Israel. And those 6 nations are doing is they're the surrounding nations. That's why he doesn't mention Ashur, he doesn't mention Mitzrayim, because those are not border nations. And he basically tells us 4 things that those nations did wrong. For 3, God was ready to forgive them. But for the 4th Avera, the 4th is always actually mentioned and referenced, God is not going to forgive them, and he mentions their punishment. Then after mentioning those 6 nations, Amos discusses what Yehuda did. Yehuda and Yisrael are represented separately. And Yehuda's great grave sin is that they rejected the Torah. Okay, that's Yehuda, that's the southern kingdom, that's the better kingdom, and that they rejected the Torah. Who would Micha be referring to? So if you look at if you look in his introduction, he says that he gave prophecy during the days of Uzziah and Yeravam ben Yoash, right? So Uzziah, at the end of his reign, was bad. He rebelled against God. His son Yotam was very good, but Yotam's son Ahaz was terrible. And there was a time where Yehuda could be referred to as rejecting Torah. Ahaz's son, however, Chizkiyahu, which is after Amos, turned things around. Okay, but and his son Menashe was very bad. Anyway, that's the problem. The kings are coming and going, and they're good ones, bad ones, and it doesn't seem to be a string of too many good kings. And that's where my introduction ends, because the Haftorah begins with Perek Bet Pasuk Vav. So you get it? There are 7 treatments. 6 nations, then Yehuda, and over all 7 of them, it says, for these 3 sins, Radak's Chiddush is that he actually finds 3 sins of all those nations. Rashi, the Metsudos just say it's the 3 sins, Agile Rash, Fichus Tamim, of Odezara, God was ready to forgive those 3, but the 4th one, God would not forgive. So those 7 are the introduction. The 8th example of the 4th sin that's going to do them in is where our Haftorah begins. Ko Amar Hashem. Al shlosha pishei Yisrael ve'al arba'a lo ashivenu. For the 4 sins of Israel, the 4th sin, I'm not going to forgive that sin. What's the 4th sin? Perek Bet Pasuk Vav. You have it? Almost. So the 4th sin is al michrom ba'kesef tzadik ve'evyon ba'avur na'alayim. This is what connects the Haftorah to Parshas Vayeshev. And I submit to you that it's a very weak connection. For 1, if this is referring to Mechiras Yosef, then this should have been Yehuda's sin, right? Yehuda was the one who advised to sell him. Why is this the northern kingdom's sin more than Yehuda's sin? Yehuda was in on it. Yehuda was the one who suggested selling him.
But they all agreed with this, actually, right? Zaza brother agreed with what Yehuda...
But He's not talking about the sons of Yaakov. He's talking about the 10 tribes of Israel in his own time. And Yehuda was one kingdom to the south, and Yisrael was the other kingdom to the north. If this is referring to actually Mechiras Yosef, it's very strange to divide this between the two kingdoms, as if though Yehuda was not involved with the sale of Yosef. Yehuda, the person, was the one who suggested to sell him. So why does this the sin for the sale of Yosef only attach itself to Yisrael and not to Yehuda? That's the first question. Second question is that the simple pshat of this pasuk seems to have nothing to do with Mechiras Yosef. It has to do with the horrific practice at this time to sell people into slavery, especially their children, if they can't pay back debt. You get it? Al michram bakesef tzadik. They sell a righteous person into slavery. The evyon, and a poor person, ba'avur na'alayim, which means that because they are unable to pay back a debt on a pair of shoes. Now, because of the tradition that this refers to Yosef, if you have the sheet, you see at the very bottom of the page. This is called Yonatan ben Uziel. Do you see it? So there's one very, very famous, well-read Targum to the Torah called Targum Onkelus. Then the Gemara in Megillah speaks of a Targum to Nevi'im written by Yonatan ben Uziel, but it does not speak of a Targum to the Torah called Yonatan ben Uziel. It's probably a misnomer. In the early manuscripts, they wrote the Rosh Tevos, they wrote an abbreviation Tuf Yud. And Tuf Yud was meant to be Targum Yerushalmi, and someone mistakenly read it as Targum Yonason to the Torah. Okay, the reason why I suspect it's not Yonason is not just because the Gemara doesn't speak about it, but also because there are references in Targum Yonason to the Torah of events well after Yonason ben Uziel. There's they're getting into scholarship now, but there seems to be references to Islamic teachings or teachings regarding Islam in Targum Yonason. It seems to be later, plus the fact that no one before Menachem Harakanati, who was the student of the Ramban, ever makes reference to Targum Yonason ben Uziel. To be sure, Tosfos and Shas makes reference to a Targum Yerushalmi ala Torah quite often, but they never mention Targum Yonason ben Uziel. All right, that's a moot point for us. What they have in common is that the Targum Yerushalmi Targumim, there are about 7 or 8 of them, they take great liberties with the biblical text. Okay, you got that? They're very midrashic. So listen, let me read a little bit of Targum Yonason to the pasuk where Yosef is sold. Ready? It says, see if you can get the Aramaic, Vizabinu Yas Yosef, they sold Yosef, La Arva'in, to Arabs, Be'esrin Ma'in Diksaf, for 20 silver pieces, that's written in the Torah. Vizabnu Minhon Sandalin, and with that money they bought sandals. Where did Targum Yonason get a tradition that Yosef was sold for shoes? Well, it's our pasuk. If this is the Haftorah of Parshas Vayeshev, this could be the only reason, because this is a somewhat willy-nilly reference to Yosef. Okay? But if you turn the page to the second page, the one where I gave you the Meforshim, right? If you turn the page there, not just Ibn Ezra, who says, Al Mikhramar, Al Mikhram, Al Ashoftim Yedaber, V'ha'eit tzadik b'rivo. It's not talking about Yosef. It's talking about justice. It's talking about court cases at that time. And indeed, Rashi says the same. Hadayanim hayu mochrim esmi shehu zakai b'din b'kesef. Didn't mention anything about Yosef. No one mentions anything about Yosef. Metzudas David. Hayu matin din ha'tzadik. Umochrim oso. they would sell a tzaddik into slavery. Okay? So it's only the Radak who makes some kind of reference to the fact that this entire Haftorah has a certain strategy to it. This is brilliant. If you get what this is doing, we're going to read through the whole entire Haftorah, and this is what Amos is doing. Amos actually speaks against the northern tribes, Shlosha Pishei Yisrael, but he did not come from the northern tribes. Look in the beginning of the book, he comes from Tekoa. Okay, Tekoa. Anybody ever visit a place called Ma'alei Amos in the Shomron? Our family once spent the Shabbos there. It's right near. There's a modern city called Tekoa there, right. And you can actually see Yerushalayim from there. It's such a high hill, you can see Yerushalayim on a clear day. And it's in Arei Yehuda. So why is someone from Yehuda speaking to the people in the northern tribes? So the answer is because he was moved to try to fix things in Israel. Israel was a much more corrupt place. Israel, I mean Israel, the northern tribes, than Yehuda was. And this is, I submit to you, based on my reading of Radak, this is the strategy of Amos in this Haftorah. He knows that his audience remembers the story of the Mechiras Yosef. He knows that that's a despicable part of our history. The Meshech Chochma says that that's why we have to read about the 10 martyrs on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av to elicit sadness, but on Yom Kippur to elicit atonement. Yosef's brothers never fully received atonement for selling him. Yosef expresses understanding of his brothers. Mm-hmm. He excuses his brothers. It's not you who sold me, it's God who sold me, right? But I have reason to suspect that the brothers at least felt that he never actually forgave them for selling him. He excuses them but doesn't forgive them. How do I know that? What makes me think that at the end of Bereishis?
But they also didn't make any serious tshuva on this subject. They were sorry that they put him into the pit yourself. But in general, they didn't say that. Oh, we were wrong from the very beginning. Not at all.
I submit to you, Yaakov, that it may be that they said that, but it's not written in the pasuk. How do you know? Prove to me that you're right.
No,
right. I think you're right. Prove to me, not from that story when he identifies himself. Prove to me from the end of the story that the brothers felt that Yosef really didn't forgive them.
I don't know this. I don't know about Yosef. I don't know, but about the brothers, I heard from several distinguished rabbis.
I see by Leon's smile that he has the answer.
Okay.
Unmute. Because obviously they say that, you know, we'll be slaves to you. You know, that they think that he's going to punish them now.
Well, punish them significantly. After Yaakov died, they came to him and said, our father told us to tell you.
Oh, yes, of course.
Tshuva, command us.
Right, not to kill us for what we did to you, right?
Right.
First of all, Yaakov never said that. Yaakov probably never found out that the brothers sold him, right? It was a cherim that he should never know, and they kept that cherim. Even Binyamin kept that cherim, mm-hmm. Right? That's why Binyamin's descendants are always blessed with holding their mouths, mm-hmm. Right? Shaul and Esther, right? And Binyamin's stone on the Choshen is called the Yoshfei, Yeshpeh. He has a mouth. He knows how to hold it, right? So they all held on to that cherem, right? So Yaakov never knew. And if Yaakov had known, I doubt if he would have accused Yosef of really wanting to kill his brothers. And if he had known, and if he was afraid that Yosef would kill his brothers, wouldn't it make more sense? Yeah.
to obviously to look to reconcile them, not to say, you know, don't kill them. I mean,
if not to reconcile them, at least tell Yosef directly. don't tell the brothers. You know, you want, better tell them that I don't want him to kill you. Tell Yosef yourself.
Right.
Anyway, so you can understand that Klal Yisrael, throughout the generations, to our very own time, have a sense of how, what a horrific, horrible, miserable element of our collective history, because it involved so many of us, like the Egel. The sale of Yosef is a blotch upon our history. So I would submit to you that Amos is using the entire Parshas Vayeshev saga in order to bring home his point of how bad the behavior of Bnei Israel is right now. And I turn also to chapter 38, where Yehuda leaves his brothers. Rashi suggests that the reason why Yehuda leaves his brothers at that time is because they made his life miserable. They blamed him for Mechiras Yosef. Why blame Yehuda? He saved his life. Before Yehuda said, let's sell him, they wanted to kill him. So why did they blame Yehuda?
Because he's the leader.
Even though he's
the only one spoken up.
Correct. Even though he's son number four, they said to him, Yehuda, we wouldn't have listened to Reuven if he insisted to take him home, but we would have listened to you. That's a tall order, right? But the Gemara says that if you're in a position to rebuke someone and you don't, you bear some of the guilt.
Uh-huh.
The whole big sugya in Maseches Shabbos, because Rav Elazar ben Azariah didn't object to someone whose cow wore a bell on Shabbos. So the Mishnah refers to it as Rav Elazar ben Azariah's cow. So, and then it gets off, the whole Gemara there gets off on the tangent about Mutav Yishogin, Bayu Mazidin, and other people who didn't rebuke, and other people who didn't sin. You know, it's amazing, amazing sugya. That's just a tangent to that little story about the cow with the bell. All right. So this is what's happening here, is that Yehuda is forced to leave the household because the brothers blamed him for Mechiras Yosef. Maybe that's not fair, but it is what it is, and he leaves.
Okay? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it is you probably is known. I heard from Rabbi Yitzchak Zilber, Alav Shalom, several times the same thing, that actually the attitude of the brothers towards yourself was the ground for anti-Semitism in the future. He said it several times because they treated it as an out, and it was terrible, and it was not atoned, this thing. He said it several times.
I would say the ground for anti-Semitism is, let me compare it to something historical in the year 1242. Okay, 1242 was a very famous, huge, huge bonfire of thousands and thousands of Talmuds in France, right?
Right.
Each one would sell today for $1 million. I mean, if you had it, thousands and thousands of cartloads and cartloads of Talmuds. What happened 2 years before then in the Jewish community?
Rambams that works were burned.
Yeah, piles and piles of Rambams were burnt in the anti-Maimonidean protests. So, you know, it's like you start with one thing and you know, before you know it, you're killing the ox, you're killing Yosef. So all right, I think that's what Yaakov is alluding to, and it's hard to disagree. But let me get to the point I'm trying to make of what Amos is doing. He starts off by railing against this despicable practice, which you may recall just a few weeks ago I referred to in Parshas Vayera, about the woman who ran to Elisha because the creditor was still taking her two children. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And he made a miracle for her with the oil, and he said, now go pay back your debts and get your children, right? So you see that Israel practiced this thing. You see that in the narrative in Sefer Melachim, in the Book of Kings, you have this lemaisa, you have this referenced about this horrific practice in the north of Israel. I don't know if we saw it in Yehuda, but it's going on here in Israel, that michrom bakesef tzadik, that they're selling people into slavery. Now, what Amos is doing very cleverly.
But after after the signing, how could you do it? It is a terrible sin.
Yaakov, Israel is sinning terribly all along. What are you going to say? That they did, because they proof that they didn't know the Torah? That's what the Bible critics say. Really? And all the Jews who don't follow the Torah today also proves that we don't have a Torah and a Talmud? Jews have been violating the Torah ever since it has been given. So there are Jews who are not quick to follow the Torah. Okay, so the Amos, his spirit stirred him to speak against this miserable practice. But look how clever he is. He is trying to get the people themselves to recognize that our behavior is like what the brothers did to Yosef. What the brothers did to Yosef is universally condemned for all of our history. And Amos wants to phrase his terminologies, his condemnations in this perek of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3, which comprises our Haftorah, into what on the face of it, how I started this year, looks like a Haftorah that has the weakest connection to its Torah portion in the entire Torah. I submit to you that's really what it looks like. Such a weak connection. There is nothing here. This Kesef is not the Mechiras Yosef. This Tzadik is not Yosef, right? In Pshat, even Rashi says so. But then look what goes on in the next few psukim. Hashoafim al afar eretz, berosh dalim v'derech anavim yatu, v'ish ve'aviv yelchu el ha'na'ara l'man chalel l'shem kodshi. They drive poor people into the dust. That's what they do when they sell these people into slavery. And they're also sexual averos. Father and son go to the same woman. Hever, what's that talking about in our parsha?
Yehuda and Tamar.
Right. Is a father and not one, but two sons who happen to end up with the same woman. And there are two opinions that are suffered in Chazal. One at the end of the story that says, Lo yasafod l'da'ata. I have to say, the good pshat mefarshim say he did not continue to stay with her. When he learned it was his daughter-in-law, he said, okay, I conceived the child with her. It was by false pretenses. I thought she was a Kadesha, I thought she was a Zona, whatever. And I'm not going anywhere further with that. But in Bereishis Rabbah, there's another opinion because it says that Eldad Umeida gave prophecy Velo Yosafu, which there is understood to mean by Targum Onkelos they did not stop giving prophecy. So to hear Velo Yosafu, Lo Yosafu B'data means he did not cease from knowing her. He stayed married to her. At that time, Yibum could be performed not only by a brother, but by a father.
Wow. Isn't it written? I don't remember exactly.
For Matan Torah.
They did not, never since that time, Yehuda met her privately and so on.
Okay, the point of the first opinion is that had he known that it was Tamar, he never would have gone near her like
that. Okay, very good.
All right, but anyway, you have those two opinions. But when Amos mentions father and son going to the same woman, right? You hear what it's saying here? Father and son going to the same woman. It rings a bell in your ear, and like what Dr. Goldfarb just said, it reminds you of the same story. We start off in chapter 37. We're moving to chapter 38. And read on. Ba'abagodim chavulim yatu etzel kol mizbeach. B'yein anushim yishtu beis Eloheihem. Maseh bigodim chavulim. Look at how miserable these people are. But they're religious. They're religious. Right? The Gemara in Bava Kamma speaks about a man who steals grain and he wants to make it into a dough and he wants to remove challah from it. He wants to make a bracha. The Gemara says, "Eino mevarech al manaitz." Don't make a bracha on such wheat, on such dough. There's no challah to be removed from that. You want to be a ganef? Go ahead, eat tevel also. Don't pretend that you're not concerned with choshen mishpat. But all of a sudden, I'm a big Yeridea fan. All right. If you're going to steal the dough, don't remove challah and don't make a bracha on it. Okay? So bigodim chavulim are garments that are taken as collateral when that garment should not have been taken as collateral. Because it's the garment that the person needs to sleep with at night, or right? Okay? You know, the Torah talks about which garments you're not allowed to take as collateral, right?
Right.
Okay? So, begodim chavulim, what do they do with such garments? They redeem them, they sell them, and they use the money for korbanos. Oh, look how religious these people are. Right? God says, I hate an ola purchased with stolen money. Sonei gezel ba'ola. I hate it. That's not true about the ancient Near East. The gods were not moral. I need my goat. I need my animal. I need my libations. I need my oil. I need my grains. And if you have to steal it to get it to me, so be it. Right? So God says it's all mine anyway, right? Read Tehillim chapter 40 and 50 and you'll see. So this is the Begodim Chavulim. How does that connect to our parsha? There was a violent garment in our parsha. In fact, there are a few of them.
The garment that was torn and dipped in the blood.
The garment that was torn and dipped in the blood is Bagudim Chavulim, yes. At least as much as what I just described. There's another Bagudim Chavulim in our parsha. Can you think of it?
Wife rips.
Yes. When Potiphar's wife grabs on to Yosef's garment, his shirt, and she rips it. Right? You know, there's a cute medrash that says that they wanted to kill Yosef in a minute. You know, a slave is accused of propositioning the master's wife. Forget it. There's no due process for such a thing.
Right.
Right. So first of all, there's one medrash that says Potiphar went over to Yosef, whispered in his ear, and he goes, "Listen, Yosef, I don't believe her for a second, but I gotta do this. This is what you have to do here. You know, you can't get away with this. I'm sorry that you were accused of such. I hope that you're successful in jail." It's part of the story. We all know that. Another opinion says that Eliyahu HaNavi came in the room and said, "Wait a second, don't kill him right on the spot. Let's look at where his garment is torn. If it's torn in the front, that means he was attacking her. If it's torn in the back, that means he was trying to escape." But however you look at it, it's Begodim Chavulim, right?
Yeah.
So what Amos is so clever in doing here, he is making some willy-nilly references to a famous story, right? It is, of course, our very clear position, and we take it for granted, of course. I mean, it's so simple, it's so obvious that the people writing these stories, the Nevi'im, knew the Torah, right? You know, the Bible critics say the Torah wasn't known yet for another few hundred years, but that's not a position that we can entertain, and it's also a heretical interpretation. So what Amos is doing is he's using a very familiar story in the Torah that is universally considered to be a despicable story. And he is showing the people in his time that you are behaving in the same way. And once you agreed with me that story that I described in that parasha, those things are wrong, it's sort of the way that Nasan HaNavi tells David a story that gets him to basically accuse himself.
Right.
where you can say Atoha Ish, you're the man who did that. And because he pronounced such a strict death penalty for stealing sheep, so he lost four children in his lifetime, which is the punishment for stealing sheep. To pay for the sheep, but he lost four children in his lifetime because of his stringent psak. But the point is that what Amos is doing is something rather similar, right?
What? Yes, doing what?
I'm sorry, the question. Okay, all right. So this is let's read on a little further. It says that and they're drinking the wine of violence, the wine of misappropriation in their houses of worship. So the next few psukim is just that I don't deserve this. God deserves better. He wiped out these enemies of yours, not so that you could be immoral like them. And if you act immorally the way they did, then you'll be kicked out of your land just like they were. Right? So that continues to look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. And I gave you so much. I looked after you for 40 years in the desert. I took care of the Amori and cleared a whole land for you to reside in. Look at Yud Aleph. Akin mibneichem l'neviim. Very strange. The only time in outside of the story of Shimshon where a Navi speaks of a Nazir this way. Very positive expression. How could the Gemara even have an opinion that a Nazir is a sinner in light of this Pasuk? Because Hashem is saying, I gave you the land of the Amorites. I took care of you for 40 years in the desert. And I appointed Nevi'im to teach you, to guide you. And I appointed Nazirim to teach you. Right? So, okay, depends why the person becomes a Nazir. But I find something very, very interesting. The Targum Yonason to the word Nazirim is Malfehon. Malfehon, meaning teachers. Targum does not translate Nazirim as Nazir, because the Targum to Nazirim is Nazirin. Right? So he does not translate the word Nazir here twice in Amos, the typical way that Nazir is translated by Unkelus in the Torah. I'm just saying. So maybe to protect that opinion that says that an actual Nazir is possibly a negative thing. But how does this connect to Yosef?
His brother said to him,
once again. Anybody have an idea? So, Yosef is actually described in the Torah, Ulukot Kod Nazir Echav.
His brothers became Nazir because they didn't drink wine after they let that turn. It's that incident.
That's true too. The Medrash does say that the brothers did not drink wine all that time that Yosef was sold, because it says that when Yosef entertained them after all those years, Yosef is 39 then, and he was 17 when he was sold, so it's 22 years it's been, and it says that he gave them wine and they immediately became drunk, and Rashi writes the copies of the Medrash from Bereishis Rabbah that they had not been drinking all that time, so a little bit of wine got
there. That's my point, students.
Oh, they didn't recognize Yosef.
Right, no, they didn't.
Right, but the
that's the Nazir.
It could be, but I think it's a simpler connection. Yosef is called the Kakod Nazir Echav because a Nazir is estranged. Yosef was estranged from his brothers. He was like a Nazir to his brothers. So to mention Nazirim, otherwise it's really strange. No Navi, no one of the Nevi'im Achronim, no one, Yishayel, Yemiyahu, Yechezkel, Treyasar, except Amos, makes a reference like this to the Nazirim alongside the Nevi'im or leaders or things like that. It seems that he is purposely trying to bring up the light bulb in the minds of his listeners. Oh, yeah, the Nazir, Kol Nazirachav. That's also Yosef. Okay. All right, so this is what you have of Amitz Libo Bagibarim. Look at Pasuk Tes Zion, the last Pasuk in Perek Bet. Amitz Libo Bagibarim, Arom Yonus Bayomahu Ne'um Hashem. The mightiest among them will escape unclothed in that day. Does that also sound a little right? Bayonas, Fayetze, Achutza.
She took well, actually, she ran away from her.
Right. He was a Gibor also.
Right, yeah. So she stripped him of, you know, Yosef keeps getting stripped of his clothes. It's just that almost seems to be, and the Pesukim I underlined here, Yosef seems to be the object of hints in this Haftorah. You can say, yeah, you come on, you're extracting it, you're pulling it out. I don't know. Bayonos is not a common word. The beautiful Medrash that says, Hayom Ra'a Vayonos. Hayardain Yisov Le'achor.
I didn't see that it ran. That's what it says.
Right? So the Medrash asks, what did the sea see, right, the S-E-A-S-E-E, in order to split. The sea doesn't want to split. The sea wants this, nature wants to stay natural. So what did the sea behold in order to split?
The bones of the outside.
The Medrash says, Hayam, listen to the words. Hayam ra'a vayanos. What it saw was vayanos, vayetze hachutza. Those are the words the Torah uses, like our words here, how Yosef escaped Potiphar's wife while she held on to his jacket. The sea, what did the sea look at? Because the water doesn't want to go against its nature, but when the sea, the Yamsuf, saw that Yosef went against his nature, don't read the story necessarily that Yosef didn't struggle with this decision in this week's parsha. Yosef struggled big time.
Of course.
Right? He knows that he's never going to see his family again.
He was what, 18?
17, oh yeah. He knows he's not going to see his family again. He knows how this woman can come down hard on him. This is certainly the worst case of sexual harassment in, of course, if you count what Shechem did to Dina, that's worse. But he knows what she's capable of doing. He asked him, he can justify giving in to her to save his life, right? And instead he holds firm, and it says that he saw a picture of his father, not that it magically came to him. And what kind of credit would he deserve? The picture was that something that he was able to conjure himself, right?
Yeah.
This is a 17-year-old, good-looking boy with his hormones could be raging. Who knows what's going on with him?
Right.
He's a slave, and maybe this woman will treat him nicely if I give in to her. And he knows what's at stake. He knows the terrible things she's capable of doing to him. And yet he so went against his grain, so the river said, okay, God, if Yosef went against his nature, I'll go against my nature. Hayam ra'a, bayanos fayetze achutza. Hayodeni sov lachar, etc., etc. Right?
He ran away from sinning, just like Yosef ran away from sinning.
Yeah.
From killing the Jews.
Yeah. And there's another medrash that says another event that took place where someone profoundly went against his nature. Because the lashon for splitting the sea is vati boka hayam. Vati boka hayam. Give me another word like that. Very rare word in the Torah. It's only used very few times as a verb. Vati baka hayam. Where do you see that verb? I'll give you a hint. It's vayi baka.
For the water of the stone.
No,
cool,
the what?
Mm.
that
Avraham splitting the wood to take with him to the Akedah. So the Medrash says, if Avraham could do Vayibaka, I could do Vatibaka.
Wow.
Right? So whenever we have these kind of stories, the Gemaras, the Midrashim is so amazing at finding those little nuances. And it usually has to be a strange word. Then it becomes like Mufna, you know. It can't be a word that appears so often that Tawat. It appears that's just the word.
Wow.
It has to be something unusual. So when Omo says Arom Yonus Bayomahu, the reader with a careful ear hears Parshas Vayeshev here. Okay?
I thought from someone that there is such a perus that if Yosef had been able to refrain from relation with the wife of Potiphar, he would be the chief of the Israeli tribes. But because it was still made from above, because the image of his father appeared, you see, he was not... I don't remember who said it. And
look, I hear what you're saying. I'm not familiar with that version of things.
Funny.
Not familiar with that version. At this point, Yosef was supposed to be the ruler of the king was supposed to come to Yosef. Whether some things are going to happen between now and Parshas Vayechi that's going to make Yaakov change and make it Yehuda. By the way, next week, a week from tonight, we have a real treat because the fact that Chanukah is falling on a Friday means that this year we're reading the Haftorah on Miketz that look at the calendar, we hardly ever read.
Mm-hmm. Once in 50 years or
something. A little more often than that. The last time was maybe 20 years. I remember it since I'm at OHTEDEC. But it's very rare. It's one of the rarest Haftorahs. And it's a real treat because now that Yaakov mentioned it, It's what I think is the reason why that Haftorah was chosen for Miketz is part of the reason why Yosef lost the Malchus and it went to Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We'll work on that next week. And if you look now, look at Perek Gimel Pasuk Beis, because Amos does have a certain vision of the favoritism status that Bnei Yisrael enjoys in God's world, but that they're quickly losing that favoritism to the point that God is going to not only not favor us, he is going to be more harsh with us because we're his favorite status. So look at Perek Gimel Pasuk Beis. This is now drawing towards the end of the Haftorah. Maybe you recall the Haftorah of Parshas Kedoshim, the very end of Amos, where it says, Halo kivnei kushiyim atem li ne'um Hashem. Right? So he wants to say that, you know, what makes you think you're so special? Lots of nations in the world, right? I took out the Plishtim from Kaftor, I took out the Arameans from Kir, right? Other nations also had their some salvations and they were enslaved. You think you're the only slaves in the world, right? Who broke the yoke of their slavery to become free? Right, so he says, look at Pasuk Gimel, Per Gimel Pasuk Beis. Rak eschem yodati mikol mishpachos ha'adama. Al kein efkod aleichem es kol avanoseichem. How does this also conjure up images of our parsha? You know, it's Yosef is a favored son of Yaakov that leads us into these stories. Now we draw to the close of the Haftorah, and I must ask a few questions about Yosef at this point. Yosef is 17 years old. It's inconceivable that someone at 17 can be so immature and so socially inept at 17 as to share his dreams with his brothers the way he does. a 9-year-old knows not to behave that way. An 11-year-old knows, and teachers have to know to cut that off at the pass. And teachers treat a teacher's pet. What he's doing is he's making every kid in that class beat up that teacher's pet during recess. Right? So doesn't Yaakov know that this is what's happening? That this is what's going to lead to?
Probably.
One has to imagine that if Rachel were alive, she would have fixed it. She would have cleared that up. She would have told Yosef, don't tell those stories. Don't tell the dreams.
I got to learn to.
So why doesn't Yaakov step in? And Adarabba, Yaakov eggs it on with his favoritism. Rakos chem yadati. Rakos cho yadati mikol banai. Okay, what?
There are some very, very loved children, and they have an absolutely different status. I saw that example.
Okay, but here's where I'd like to start drawing towards a conclusion of Daf Torah.
Is that a Nebuah he was saying? Was he saying a Nebuah?
Yes, that's where it's going. That's where it's going. It's Ramban. Like of all of the various interpretations of what's going on between Yosef and his brothers, and especially, although this goes beyond our Haftorah a little bit, but in the Pshat, I would say that the reason why the brothers are resorting to kill Yosef, the Sforno talks about this, you see in the Meforshim that, Avram has two sons, but only one carries on. Yitzchak, Ibn Ezra says that Yitzchak and Rivka had many children. Prove it. We only know about two of them in the story, but they had many children.
Who?
Yitzchak and Rivka.
Never heard about it.
Because Yitzchak tells Yaakov, Yishtachavu lecha b'nei imecha. All of your mother's children will bow to you. So Rashi says that's talking about the grandchildren, the next generations, fine. But Yitzchak and Rivka have many children. Okay, that's Ibn Ezra. It could be yes, it could be no. Can't be both yes and no. But only one of them follows Yitzchak's legacy. He be Yitzchak, but lo b'chol Yitzchak. Yaakov has many children. Avram had 12 children. Yitzchak and Rivka had 10 children. Yaakov has 12 children.
So only two. Children of Yitzchak and Rivka were worthy of attention. All the others were not worthy.
But that's what the brothers are worried about.
Right.
The brothers are worried, are we going to be like Yishmael and Midian and Midan and Dedan and all these? Are we going to be like all the others who fall out?
Right.
We don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. We feel that our father is going to be B'nai Yisrael, not B'nai Yosef. This might be the kapara that Yosef has to perform at the end of the story, that he never tells his father what happened. And we started off that before. He never tells his father. The Medrash says that when Yaakov saw Yosef's two children, he says, who are these kids? Because Yosef hid from his father. He moved away. He couldn't live near him anymore. Because every time Yaakov saw Yosef, he would say, so Yosef knew, what happened those years? What happened the day I sent you? And Yosef swore he wouldn't tell. He had to do some kapara too, because if Yosef was in a position to not only tell what the brothers did, but he was in a position to embellish what they did, Yaakov would have believed anything he'd say. He could have said, I called out to them and I begged them, please, I'll be good from now on. I'll never tell you my dreams. I won't have dreams. I'll make sure daddy makes each of you a coat. I won't wear my coat anymore. I'll never bring bad reports. Just don't do it. And they spit on me. And they said, and I said, don't, please, what about daddy? And we can't wait to see him suffer and grovel. Yosef could have made up anything. And Yaakov would have believed it.
Right. Yeah.
So if Yosef, look what Yaakov did to Reuven and Shimon. Look what Yaakov did to Reuven and Shimon and Levi.
Yeah.
What they had done so many years earlier. Imagine what Yaakov would have done to all of them if Yosef embellished on what they did. So Yosef has some kapara too. By not telling Yaakov anything about that, it's his way of atoning for what he did to his brothers. But let's finish off. Ramban, I think Ramban has the mamish, the emes dikaderech of what's going on in this story. And it goes to another level. I'm sort of adding on Rav Soloveitchik's, Rav Yosheper Soloveitchik's pshat, that if you really want to come to the bottom line of what these brothers were arguing about, you have to go to the depths of Yosef's dreams and ask the question, why is he dreaming about Egyptian preoccupations? He should have dreamt about 12 sheep bowing to him, or 12 sheep and a shepherd's staff, or 12 shepherd's staffs bowing to him, whatever, 11 shepherd's staffs. He should have dreamt about things that they're preoccupied with. Instead, Egyptians were preoccupied with farming and with astrology. So he dreams about stars, and he dreams about sheaves of grain. He doesn't dream about anything involving shepherding, because Yosef can't wait to get out of there. He grows up on a farm in Iowa, and he wants to go to the big city. And he knows that we're the fourth generation, and we're going to have to go someplace to be slaves. Did they know it would be Egypt? I don't know. We're going to be in a strange place. And we better get to know that place. We better be used to what it's like to live in a diaspora. And the brothers said, we don't have to do that. We're Yaakov's sons. We'll be able to maintain ourselves in the diaspora. And Yosef says, no, I don't think that's true if you're not prepared for it. Right? Dina is in a box. As soon as she gets out of the box, then we're in trouble. Right? We won't be able to stay in the box all that time. So they said, okay, we'll send you to Egypt and you'll see how you do there. Right? And Yosef Hayyab Mitzrayim, Yotnase Melech, Vomeid Bitzidkaso. Right? That's why we say, that those two boys, at least in some form, remained Ephraim and Menashe, even in the Galus. So this is all part of a Nevuah. Everything Yosef dreams is part of a Nevuah. He wasn't just mischievous when the brothers came to him in next week's parsha, where he says he remembered his dreams, and that's why he had to bring Binyamin, because in the dream, Binyamin bows down to him also. What about the moon?
That's
how can that dream come true?
The parents.
But Rachel's dead.
Metaphorically speaking.
I'm sorry, what?
It's a metaphor.
So you can say even more pshat. It's Bilha. Rachel died when Binyamin was born and Yosef was an infant. Bilha no doubt raised them. No doubt. She's Sarah Rachel's handmaiden. Bilha raised them. The moon becomes Bilha. Right? Yaakov didn't see that way in the beginning. We're like, shall I and your mother come and bow down to you? Yaakov is trying to deflect the enmity of the brothers against him by saying that. His dreams are narish, but the dreams are real. The dreams have to come true because the dreams are part of the salvation of his people. So look at the very end of the Haftorah where he almost says, do you think I want to say these things? Do you think I want to predict the end of my people? What does he say? He says, Ki lo yaseh Hashem davar, look at Pasuk Zayin, kim golos sodo el abadav anbiim. God doesn't just let things happen without revealing the message to his prophets. Aryeh sha'og mi lo yirah. The lion is roaring, who's not afraid? Hashem Elokim diber mi lo yinoveh. That's the end of the Haftorah. Chevra, I submit to you that this Haftorah is as clever as any in connecting to the Parsha. It has the Parsha open in front of the Navi when he writes it. He is purposely finding references to events in the Parsha so that his audience can say, really, oh my goodness, we're behaving like Bechiras Yosef? Maybe he's got something there. At least now we understand why he has to say these things. Hashem diber, milo yinovei. And that's what Yosef was feeling. God is speaking through my dreams. Yosef really felt. That may be a little precocious for a 17-year-old, but he is Yosef. Yosef loves to be helpful. The Sforno says, Ro'eh sechov batzon. He would help his brothers in their shepherding. They said, what do we want this little pisher telling us how to be a shepherd? But I'll tell you this, Yaakov was probably the world's greatest shepherd of all time. How he got those goats to do what they did in Parshas Vayetze, we'll never know. Right? But Yaakov knows some secrets that he probably shared with Yosef. And Yosef got the Ksonis Pasim, which literally means long sleeved. Pasim is your wrist. So ksonis pasa means a shirt that goes up to your two wrists, which means that you're wearing a long sleeve shirt because you're studying, you're not working in the fields. Pasim can also mean stripes, but okay, that could be something of the message, and that's that Yosef had the special treatment, but it went beyond simply the knowledge of everything that Yaakov taught him to actual nevuah. He believed it, Yaakov believed it, and now the reader of this week's Haftorah can believe it. And I close with that. Next week, again, is a real treat. We're going to do a rare Haftorah. It's a shame because Haftorah for Shabbos Chanukah is also amazing. And that's where we'll go next week. Okay?
Maybe Sinatkinam comes from the attitude towards yourself. Because we still bear the same thing. It was not somehow.
Yes, but let's be careful of calling the brothers' hatred of Yosef sinas chinam. He gave them some reason. I'm not saying that it's chinam. No one thinks he'd lay hate anybody b'chinam. Everybody thinks they have a reason to hate.
Oh yeah, well okay. No, but you know very well that we are so fragmented, Jews. It is unbelievable.
Yeah, but okay, but still have to love the Jews. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye, everybody.
So much.
Have a great week.